We have a lot of things to discuss. Obviously, Dodgers, Giants, what happened last night, all those things. But let's put it in perspective. He is a new Bay Area Radio Hall of Famer, as you just heard. He is our own Marty Lurie. He joins us courtesy of the UMA guest line. First and foremost, congratulations. Way to go, man.
What a thrill. Thank you so much.
Cool.
Yeah, it was a shock to me. When you look at the competition, it was Tim Roy and Tom Tolbert and Brian Murphy and Sam Skinner. And I got picked, so I'm very grateful, believe me.
And I think those names will all go in eventually, but you rightfully are in your place. And I thought you were already in, to be honest with you, Marty. I think people have been listening to you, obviously, on both sides of the bay since 1997. But your story is fascinating, where you started in your career and where you are now. I've often thought about doing the opposite of my career, stop being a sportscaster and going to being an attorney, but the pay cut would be too extreme, Marty, so I'm not going to do that. Your love of baseball and just to make a career change like that, I don't want to say late in your life, but, you know, maybe in the fifth inning or fourth inning of your life, is a fascinating story that not too many can tell.
Well, I was a big baseball fan growing up. Baseball was my unconditional friend. And even in all the years of practicing criminal law in Florida for a couple of years and the rest of the time out here through 1995, baseball was always part of my life. I did Giants Vision in 1987 and 88. Corey Bush and Mike Shapiro brought me out to program the board with the hero notes. I would come from court with my suit on. And I played a lot of softball with everybody in those days. And, you know, I just got to a point of burning out. And people said, God, you know, why don't you try baseball on the radio? And I said, what? How could I ever do that? And I went to this little station, KECG, in El Cerrito. And it was a teaching radio station, part of El Cerrito High. And I went in and said, yeah, I'd like to try a show. And Philip Morgan, who was the uncle of Reagan Upshaw, great man, said, sure, come on in. And I said, boy, how am I ever going to do this? Talk for a half hour without stopping. You know, there was no commercials, and basically it was just a little FM station of 5 watts, and I could go outside and yell further than the station would go at that point. So I go in with books and lists and all sorts of stuff, and the light comes on, and I start talking. And for a half hour, I just talked about baseball and just didn't stop. I said, boy, that was a lot of fun. And I said, maybe I can do this. I can be ESPN, and I could get credentialed and do interviews and all this kind of stuff. And that's how it started at KECG. And a wonderful man, Joe Beery, who was the program director at KETD in Concord, and the A's were on 960 and 990 at that point. He was a big Red Sox fan, and I'm in the press box, and he wanted to talk about the Red Sox. He was a little older than I was, of the late 40s. And who could name the team other than me? I was the only one who could do that. And he said, boy, you ought to have a pregame show on my station. I said, really? And he said, yeah, I'll sell you the time, and you can come on the station. So my first show was 20 minutes leading into the A's pregame for $20. And I did a show every single day for the whole 1997-1998 season. And it just took off from there.
Marty Lurie joining us. He's in the Bay Area Radio Hall of Fame. You know, it's funny because I can remember coming here about 11 years ago, and you're one of the first guys I met, and you were in the press box. And I could tell why you worked, because it's not the way that media has become nowadays where everybody's got shock value and you got to say something crazy. It was your genuine love of the game that shone through, and just that you obviously knew what you were talking about. But that's how you are. You tune in every Saturday, and I love how we've revamped everything and had Lasky and Carrie and everything too. And you guys do an absolutely great job. But it's your passion. It's your passion for the game. It's your passion for listeners. It's your ability to listen to everybody. It's your style is completely you and unique, and I think that's why you work.
Well, I appreciate it. Look, baseball is a wonderful story. And Leonard Coppett said it years ago. He was so smart, and Bill King was such a big part of my getting going. He said, look, it's a soap opera. And when you buy in to the soap opera every day, you can't wait for the next story. And when I would do the shows, I never really knew what I was going to do the next day until I got to the park to see what the story was going to be. And this little 20-minute show went to 90 minutes before every single A's game through the playoffs and everything else. And then Larry Bear came at the end of 2009 and said, we'd like you to come over to KMBR if you would. Are you a free agent? And I said, where do I sign up? And, of course, came over to KMBR in those days and started in 2010. And that's how it all started. But my feeling is baseball is the story. It's not me. I can connect the dots of 1950 to today or yesterday or Tyler Rogers, whatever you want to do. And I think people want the story, and I like to tell the story, and that's what I like to do.
Wow, we always thought Barry Bonds was Larry's best free agent signing. I think it's you.
And it was great, Larry. Baseball moves very slowly, and this was in August, and it didn't happen until around December or January when Lee Hammer called and said, sure, come on over and let's figure out how to do this. So it was an interesting winter before 2010, and it came over in 2010, and heck, things just took off from there, and they started winning.
So you had about equal run on both sides of the bay. You mentioned Bill, and I got my Bill King bobblehead right here talking Bill bobblehead, so we'll put that on behind us. But I think what Bill's meant to both of us.
Yeah.
Let me just get your thoughts, and we'll get into what happened last night and what the Giants should do at the deadline and everything. But what's going on with the Oakland A's, Marty, and your knowledge of things beyond baseball? They get a term sheet approved yesterday, 6-1 vote, and nobody seems happy with it. And I don't know where. I think they may be even in Vegas today, looking around at the ballpark there. So, you started, at least in the Bay Area, a lot of work with the Oakland A's. What is going on with this franchise right now?
Well, I tell people these are billionaires trying to figure things out, and we don't see the world the way they see the world through their eyes. So you always have to start with that premise. And it's really up to the A's to figure out what they want to do. And if they want to, and for baseball also. And you guys have talked about it, and your analysis is exactly right. You don't want to lose the Bay Area. There's enough people here in the Bay Area to support two teams. But you have an ownership that wants to build the village and do all these kinds of things. And they want money to do it. And Oakland is a tough city to get that kind of money out of because they're losing money all the time and losing all their services. So I think it's really up to the A's. If the A's want to make this happen at Howard Terminal, they can kick in the money to make this happen. They could split the money difference to make this happen. They could use that.
You just said the A's are going to kick in money?
Yeah, really. Well, and the funny thing is, and Greg knows this, I've been, I was there for many years, and, there was a period of time I said, I'd like to do the pregame show on the road, in the playoffs, because in the playoffs all the time. And Mike Crowley said, well, we can't do that.
Right.
I said, no, I'll pay for my hotel room. You just fly me there. He said, I don't think we can do that. And that's kind of the way the A's have operated. So if they want this to happen, they can make it happen. The money is insignificant that have split these two sides. So if they want it to happen, they'll make it happen. If they don't want to make it happen and baseball agrees, they'll go somewhere else. And then eventually there'll be an expansion team put back in Oakland with new ownership. And the expansion team will pay $2.5 billion. To all the, that'll be split up with the other 30 owners, and they'll all make more money. It's all about money.
Yeah, no doubt. Marty Lurie joining us. All right, let's go to the Giants, and specifically last night. Trade deadline is coming up, and we kind of vacillate between, they need a starter, they need a bat, they need a, and now today it's, maybe they need a closer. I was looking at numbers. There's a vast difference between Tyler Rogers, not only this season, but in his career in the eighth and the ninth inning. I think he's an eighth inning guy. I don't think he's a ninth inning guy. He's blown five saves, which is the second most in baseball. What are your thoughts specifically on last night, and did they do the right thing in having Tyler Rogers out there in the ninth?
Well, I think, yes, they did. Gabe Kapler, and Pop knows this, we go back and forth on the text. This is all scripted for him. They tell him, if you get to the eighth inning and you got three lefties coming up and it's a one-run game, put McGee in. And let Rogers pitch the ninth. So that's scripted ahead of time. I don't think that was an off-the-cuff decision that they made. The problem with Rogers is he's a pitch-to-contact guy. And he puts the ball in play. And he does have some strikeouts, but the ball gets put in play. And that's why he's tough to put in a 10th or 11th inning when you need a strikeout and you need the, you know, you need to get an out to stop the ghost runner from scoring. So I think that's the problem with Rodgers. He's not really a good ninth inning guy with a one run lead. I wouldn't trust him in that situation. And I think over these 2 weeks, you got these games here, you got Pittsburgh, you got the Dodgers again, you got Milwaukee, and then it's a trade deadline. And I think over these next 10, 12 days, the Giants will figure out exactly what they need. And I think it's going to come down to bullpen. I really do. And I've come around to in my opinion, they need more bullpen. Because bullpen and pitching wins championships. Pitching wins championships. They've got enough starters to get through, I think, a championship. Tampa Bay showed how to do that last year. You get 5 innings out of the starter. Blake Snell's gone in the 6th inning of the World Series. And you start the bullpen parade. And Farhan, I think, knows that, and I think he will fortify this bullpen. Will he get a Kimbrel? See, we don't know because we don't know what the spin rates are of Daniel Hudson. We don't know what they're looking at. But believe me, when this is said and done, I think by July 31st, they will have more bullpen pieces.
What about a starter? What about another outfielder? And, you know, Duggar's kind of sliding back a little bit. You know, you may need two outfielders. So give me your thoughts on that. And then just, you know, from a philosophical standpoint, Farhan is approaching a new deadline mentality, I would think, for him. It's not about do we trade Bumgarner or not? Do we try to move some salary? He did not, you know, add the left-handed hitting outfielder last year that he was talking about, and he regretted that. How all in do you think they should be, you know, in light of where they are? I mean, the Dodgers are good, flat out. You could win the West. You could not. And then you're in a one-game wild card deal with San Diego, more than likely, Marty. So starting pitching, outfielder, how do you address that? And just what do you think Farhan's overall philosophy will be the next week?
Well, I don't think he's going to bust up the team to bring people in. I just don't see him doing that. I think they could go for a starting pitcher, but you have to, you know, the names, and John rattled off those names before the break. Are they any better than what the Giants have right now? The Giants play sound baseball. The great Orlando Cepeda mentioned this to me a few days ago. I said, Orlando, why is this team so good? He says they play sound baseball, which means they don't chase, they don't walk people, they hit home runs, and they have a good defense. So my opinion is that if they pick up a starting pitcher, it's got to be better than what they have, because I think they have enough starting pitching to take them through a playoff. And I don't think a starting pitcher is critical. I would rather see an outfielder. And I think Chris Bryant fits the bill pretty well from the Cubs. He's a rental. And in today's world, when you make these trades, even the Kimbrel trade, you don't get the first, third, and fifth best prospect anymore. You may get the 7th, 14th, and 28th. And that's the nature of baseball today. So I think they will part with some prospects. And I think the priority for me is bullpen. And I would not make a starting pitcher a priority over an outfielder, because I think right now the outfield is getting exposed a little bit. And I think they need another hitter. And then they need everybody to be healthy again. You know, you bring Belt, Longoria, La Stella, Solano, Crawford, and, you know, Posey in there. You got a pretty good offense, and Yastrzemski, I think, is legit. So I don't think you have to go out and get crazy, but I think it would be good to get one solid outfielder that you could keep out there.
Marty, again, great insight as always, and congratulations on the honor. Well deserved. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
I appreciate it. Thanks, John. Thanks,
Greg.
You got
it. Congrats, Marty. Yeah.